Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Good evening. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, Atlanta's Evening News on WSB. The phone number, if you would like to be a part of the program, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I apparently am going to say something highly controversial, for which I am being denounced for saying, and I'm right. And every single freaking person in America who is listening to this right now knows that I am right. You absolutely know I'm right. The rollout of the whistleblower complaint is coordinated. Let me give you some history. In 2012, September 11th, 2012, surprise, surprise, there was an attack on an American military installation in Benghazi, Libya. Many people, including the American ambassador, killed. And it was an absolute disaster trying to get help to these people who were left alone. It was just a massive screw-up, frankly, by the American government, by the Obama administration, and by Hillary Clinton's State Department. There was a cover-up. There absolutely was a cover-up. And the whistleblowers from Libya were righteously indignant about what happened, about their treatment, about abandonment. And they decided to take action. They went to Washington and met with interested members of Congress about what had happened. And they met privately with then-Speaker of the House John Boehner. And they began a coordinated rollout of the story of what happened in Benghazi. It was coordinated. It was coordinated with Republican members of Congress. It was no less true. It was absolutely true. There was a massive screw-up, and they were in the middle of a presidential campaign for Barack Obama's reelection, and they went overboard with the media into damage control, the Democrats did. And these guys were smart guys, and they knew the media was going to run protection for the Obama administration. And they ultimately did, but it lingered over Hillary Clinton. There's nothing per se wrong with coordination, particularly when you know a bunch of people are going to be out to get you. Now the roles are reversed, and the whistleblowers are coming for Donald Trump, and suddenly Republicans are outraged by whistleblowers. Nonetheless, there is coordination. Now, this gives rise to the president's, and this is why the Democrats don't want to go there and why the Democrats are outraged with me pointing this out. The fact is, since before the president became president, there were members in federal law enforcement and intelligence who hated the president and were out to get him. It is not a conspiracy. It is individuals. We know Andrew McCabe, and we know Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and James Comey. They were all there. I mean, there's evidence of this. And then there's, listen to this audio from Chuck Schumer in 2017.
Let me ask you, I don't know if you have seen this. I don't want to blindside you with this. This is the latest statement, latest tweet, as you were just saying. President-elect's latest yeah. unsolicited pronouncement on the intelligence community. This was his tweet just a little while ago tonight. You see the scare quotes there. Intelligence briefing on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday. Perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. We're actually told, intelligence sources tell NBC News since this tweet has been posted, that actually this intelligence briefing for the president-elect was always planned for Friday. It hasn't been delayed. Look. But he's taking these shots, this antagonism, yep. is taunting to the intelligence community.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but from what I am told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked about them. And we need the intelligence community. We don't know what's going on. Look at the Russian hacking. Without the intelligence community, we wouldn't have discovered it.
So what was the intelligence community going to do? Listen, this president, for his entire tenure, has distrusted the intelligence service. And now here comes a whistleblower with multiple other people who are willing to be called, who files the whistleblower complaint August 12th. It goes through the Justice Department. It goes through the Inspector General. It's run to the Justice Department. The Justice Department says it's not a campaign violation. It's a policy dispute. And then suddenly reporters in the middle of September start hearing whispers about the president's phone call with Ukraine's president. How did they find out? And then as the growing amplification of the president's call with Ukraine's president happens, we learn there's a transcript. And then lo and behold, we suddenly learn there's a whistleblower complaint. And the media keeps saying, we don't know if it's related to this, but it's related to this. They all know. How do they know? Who leaked? Who leaked? And then what happens? The transcript comes out. And after the transcript comes out, the whistleblower complaint, drip, drip, comes out. Drip, drip. What happens? The media immediately says, look at this paragraph. Look at this paragraph in the whistleblower complaint. It says there might be other stuff in the secure server. Drip, drip. Hey, there's a transcript from the Saudi crown prince in the server. We need to see it. Drip, drip. Hey, there's a transcript from a Vladimir Putin phone call in the secure server. We need to see it. Drip, drip. Hey, there's the transcript of a call with the Australian Prime Minister where he wants them to work with the Attorney General to figure out what happened in 2016. Drip, drip. Something else is coming. Drip, drip, drip. That's what they're doing. This is a coordinated. Y'all, I have been in politics long enough to see and recognize coordination. This gradual rollout. This is what Andrew Breitbart used to do to the left. He would roll something out. They would deny it. He'd roll out the thing that contradicted their denial. They would deny it. He'd roll something out. On it. This is coordination. And Democrats are horrified that I point this out. Poor old Cynthia Tucker used to be at the AJC. She's now over at UGA. She's just, I used to respect you. I can't believe you would say this. Come on, people, grow up. Of course it's coordinated. Doesn't mean they're not going to find something with which to undermine the presidency. But let's look at this at face value and say it's mighty coincidental that all these transcripts, they slowly start leaking out after the whistleblower complaint. And all these reporters, they knew it was coming. They knew exactly what line to fixate on once it came. And then drip, 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 all these transcripts. Come on. Of course it's coordinated. There's a catch. So here's the catch. Yes, coordinated. Yes, coordinated. Absolutely. Let's not deny it. Let's be grown-ups here. Benghazi, the rollout was coordinated. This, the rollout's coordinated. The Republicans coordinating whistleblowers against the Democrats. Democrats coordinating whistleblowers against the Republicans. Hey, this guy's represented by a Schumer-Clinton staffer. Of course, it's coordinated. But just because it's coordinated doesn't mean it's not true. They may be able to trap the president. And for the life of me, I was talking to a reporter earlier. Do you know what all of this essentially boils down to? The president listening to Rudy Giuliani, a man who is divorcing his third wife because she hid the remote control. That's actually in the divorce allegations. Judy kept hiding Rudy's divorce, remote controls, and now they're getting a divorce. And the president listens to this guy who's listening to conspiracy theories uttered by people older than Methuselah on late-night TV, and he's got the president worked up about stuff. But I got to tell you, that Australia story broke yesterday afternoon. This is a nothing burger of a story. I can't believe that. Of course, never, ever, ever underestimate the ability of Democrats to overplay their hands on stuff like this. This Australia story is nothing. The president of the United States should so you understand what it is. The president of the United States asked Australia's prime minister to help the American attorney general figure out what actually happened in 2016. End of story. That's it. That is within the lawful powers of the president of the United States. Here's Rich Lowry talking about this on TV.
But this is different in kind. The U.S. government asks foreign countries to cooperate with our duly constituted investigations all the time. The Justice Department is looking into how the bogus 2016 story started. I know everyone on the set maybe wants to move on from that and get on to Ukraine, but that's a legitimate interest, and there's nothing wrong with the President of the United States asking a foreign government.
And there's nothing wrong with the, in your mind, there's nothing wrong with the Attorney General saying, I want you to call the Prime Minister of Australia and I want you to press him on this. That's
nothing wrong at all. Just, sir, if you could please cooperate with my Attorney General. There's nothing.
Yeah, there is nothing wrong with it. There absolutely is nothing wrong with it. This is vastly different from, hey, let's help me ruin my political opponent. And I don't even think that's what happened in Ukraine. I still don't think there's an impeachable issue with the Ukraine situation unless they prove the president withheld money to make it so. That would be a violation of the power of the purse, which is an Article I power, not an Article II power. But this whole thing is ridiculous here. It is genuinely ridiculous. And but it's part of the dripping campaign, the drip, drip, drip campaign. And when you have a drip, drip, drip campaign, you need to see what all drips. It's hard to respond to. And one of the big differences between now and the Clinton impeachment is when you compare the two, frankly, the Trump administration is at a disadvantage. And the reason they're at a disadvantage is, hopefully I can easily explain this one to you. They're at the disadvantage because the Clintons had months to prepare for impeachment. They knew it was coming. They knew what Ken Starr had, and they knew how to respond to it based on what Ken Starr had. And they also had a very sympathetic media to help them push the story. What does President Trump have? He has a very hostile media. His media is absolutely hostile. They're absolutely out to get him. And he doesn't know what's coming next. There is no Star report to help them figure out the pattern of what's coming in impeachment. This is all going to happen in real time. The other problem that they have, if we really want to be honest about it, is the Twitterer-in-chief likes to handle his own messaging, and sometimes he's not the best at it, and sometimes he can get himself in trouble, even with Republicans, many of whom are behind the scenes blowing him up today for retweeting this.
Look, I don't pretend to speak for all evangelicals, but this week I have been traveling the country and I've literally spoken to thousands and thousands of evangelical Christians. I have never seen them more angry over any issue than this attempt to illegitimately remove this president from office, overturn the 2016 election, and negate the votes of millions of evangelicals in the process. And they know that the only impeachable offense President Trump has committed was beating Hillary Clinton in 2016. That's the unpardonable sin for which the Democrats will never forgive him. And I do want to make this prediction this morning. If the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, I'm afraid it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which this country will never heal.
You know, one, I don't think it will, because I think that you have President Pence move into the Oval Office. Conservatives, evangelicals will be fine with that. Not that I think that's going to happen, mind you. But it was not responsible of the president to amplify the Civil War remarks when you've got 19 Republicans in the House of Representatives leaving who don't like him and would love to pay him back for ruining their congressional careers. He probably should have cleared that. Not done that. He can be his own worst enemy sometimes. This is the playing ground. Is the president going to be impeached, though? He may get articles of impeachment. But in the Senate, I just don't see it happening right now. In fact, Mitch McConnell has mentioned this. We'll get into that when we come back.
In-depth coverage of local and national news. Traffic from the WSB Skycopter every 6 minutes. Atlanta's Evening News with Eric Erickson. Sponsored by Comcast Business on 95.5 WSB. Atlanta's News and Talk.
It is Eric Erickson here, Atlanta's Evening News. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Mike in Conyers, you're going to be up next. Welcome.
Oh, yes, sorry. I have a question. The question is, basically, what is the qualification requirement for a whistleblower? Is it someone who's a direct witness? Is it second, third-hand knowledge? And as an example, I would say this. If my sister's husband has a cousin who knows somebody in Washington, D.C., who happens to be a custodian and hears, we'll say, for example, you in talking with some establishment leaders, and y'all decided to come back and try to start a rumor, say like Trump being a clandestine white supremacist, is that, do you think that's a credible source for to qualify under the whistleblower protection?
So there are qualifications under the whistleblower statute of who can be a whistleblower. It has to be someone who is in an employment position within the government to know facts within his agency or to have learned those facts in the course of his job from other sources. It has to be documented on a particular form, which the whistleblower did, and it has to be transmitted to the inspector general of his division. And in this case, because the person was in intelligence, they sent it to the inspector general. The inspector general then begins an investigation. That's the issue. It can't be he said, she said, she said a game of phone tag without certain parameters, and even then it's got to be investigated by the inspector general. We'll actually get into this when we come back because it's an issue that's come up. Welcome. The phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's delve into this. Who can be a whistleblower? What actually happens with whistleblowers? Well, there is a federal law on this. And a federal law specifies who can be a whistleblower. And the law generally covers current federal employees, former federal employees, people who are applying to be federal employees. It does not cover members of the military. It does not cover federal contractors. It does not cover the Postal Service. They have their own agencies and entities through which they report things. There is the Office of Special Counsel that is involved. The Office of Special Counsel is an independent federal investigative and prosecutorial agency. I'm reading from their website. Their power comes from the Civil Service Reform Act, the Whistleblower Protection Act, the Hatch Act, Uniformed Service Employee, and then there are the Inspectors General. There is a Council of Inspectors General. The Inspectors General are the people who you actually, if you have an issue, you complain to the Inspector General if you think there's something going on. There were originally 12 inspectors general. There are now 72 inspectors general. The entire job of the inspector general is to inspect the agencies under which people operate, and whistleblowers, if they believe something is wrong, they file a whistleblower complaint. Remember, there is a pending inspector general report over the whole Russia matter and FISA and whatnot, and there are some people who are convinced this whistleblower has blown the whistle to distract from the pending inspector general report over FISA and the Russia investigation, which we will see. The whistleblowers, when they file, they have to either have direct knowledge that something happened, and this is part of the conspiracy theory out there, and I've got friends of mine who believe this and are really, really, really mad at me for pushing back against this. But you have to have direct knowledge that something has happened, firsthand knowledge, or you have to have credible secondhand knowledge. What is credible secondhand knowledge? It's defined by statute, and it essentially means that you have had people with firsthand knowledge tell you something. It can't be people of secondhand knowledge coming to you making it thirdhand. It's got to be either firsthand or secondhand. Secondhand being that the people who have firsthand knowledge told you about it and you blow the whistle. Now, you need to understand that the inspector general is highly respected, the intelligence inspector general. Every agency has one. There's a State Department Inspector General, Defense Department Inspector General, Commerce Department Inspector General, and the National Intelligence System has an inspector general, highly respected by Republicans and Democrats alike. I have not talked to a single Republican member of Congress who believes the director of national intelligence or the inspector general have coordinated to leak the information. And the inspector general pushing back very forcefully now against this conspiracy theory that a form was changed on which the whistleblower filed his whistleblowing application.
Push to have Ukraine investigate Joe Biden and his son.
The intelligence community watchdog debunking the GOP conspiracy theory about the whistleblower complaints. President Trump tweeting last night, who changed the longstanding whistleblower rules just before submittal of the fake whistleblower report? Drain the swamp. Other Republicans pushing that same claim, this talking point that the new rules allow secondhand or hearsay information, which they claim the Ukraine complaint relies on.
I can't believe we're talking about impeaching the president based on an accusation based on hearsay. Why did they change the rules about a whistleblower? You can use hearsay when you could not just weeks before the complaint.
He had no firsthand knowledge. He heard something from someone who may have heard something from someone.
No. His sources were firsthand sources. You know as well as I do that you do not need to have firsthand knowledge to be a whistleblower. And even if...
Well, you don't now because they changed the form. You used to. They changed the form.
But the intelligence inspector general says none of that is true. In a statement issued yesterday, Michael Atkinson wrote, the complainant had official and authorized access, including direct knowledge. The statement says the whistleblower had more than secondhand assertions, and the IG found other information supported the complainant's allegations. Meantime, President Trump made clear he still wants to know the whistleblower's identity.
He sure does.
We're trying to find out about a whistleblower. When you have a whistleblower that reports things that were incorrect, as you know, and you probably now have figured it out, the statement I made to the president of Ukraine, a good man, a nice man, knew, was perfect. It was perfect. But the whistleblower reported a totally different statement, like the statement, it was not even made. I guess statement you could say with call. I made a call. The call was perfect. When the whistleblower reported it, he made it sound terrible. And then you had Adam Schiff, who, even worse, made up my words, which I think is just a horrible... I've never even seen a thing like that. Adam Schiff, representative, congressman, made up what I said. He actually took words and made it up. The reason is when he saw my call to the president of Ukraine, it was so good that he couldn't quote from it because there was nothing done wrong. It was perfect. So Adam Schiff decided, I can't let this happen. So let me make up. Do you ever hear of this one, Gene? Do you ever hear of anything like this? So Adam Schiff made up a phony call, and he read it to Congress, and he read it to the people of the United States. And it's a disgrace.
Yeah, a buddy of mine says we should refer to this as a Schiff show. As opposed to Ukraine Gate, I think he's probably right. You know, I think we are hurt by having conspiracy theory spread, and this forum is a conspiracy theory. The idea that it was changed so the whistleblower could have secondhand information that's not true. In fact, the whistleblower used the forum that's been in place since May of 2018 before the current inspector general even took his office. That's the forum this whistleblower used, and that forum allows secondhand knowledge. The forum was changed in August so that you had to specify whether your secondhand knowledge comes from someone who works with you or someone who works somewhere else. But that's not the form the whistleblower used, we now know. He used the old form, and the old form had a box for firsthand or secondhand information. And the inspector general says, and again, this is a Trump-appointed inspector general, he says the whistleblower also did have firsthand information, although some of that may have been what was redacted. Those are the facts. If you don't like the facts, that's your problem, not mine. I'm just giving you the facts. If you want to twist them, that's fine. But, you know, there is real truth out there, and we should try to ascertain what the real truth is instead of twisting it to fit our political ends. Okay, now that we got the whistleblower taken care of, we do need to deal with the Senate and what will happen in the Senate. There have been lots of speculation, lots and lots of speculation that Mitch McConnell could just refuse to take up impeachment. He can't. The Senate rules allow the Senate to not take up anything that comes from the House. The Senate can ignore literally everything that comes from the House of Representatives. They never even have to consider it. Anything that comes from the House of Representatives, the Senate can just pretend they've never seen, except impeachment, according to the rules of the Senate that have been in place for roughly 200 years. This has been precedent in the Senate. Going back to Andrew Johnson, the Senate was forced to take it up under the rules. You don't have to believe me. Believe the leader of the Senate.
What does happen in the Senate if the House does get through with this inquiry and decide that they are going to impeach President Trump?
Well, under the Senate rules, we're required to take it up if the House does go down that path, and we'll follow the Senate rules.
There had been some discussion about, I mean, people literally going back to the Constitution and arguing there is no mandatory act on behalf of the Senate. Looking back at an interview that you gave in March saying you'd have no choice but to have a Senate trial if the House passed an article or more. But you're saying that if they did, the Senate would move ahead.
Yeah, it's a Senate rule related to impeachment that would take 67 votes to change. So I would have no choice but to take it up. How long you're on it is a whole different matter. But I would have no choice but to take it up based on a Senate rule on impeachment.
The Senate rule on impeachment, they're going to have to take it up. Now, there's a catch. Don't let your heart be troubled, as Sean Hannity would say. There is a catch. The Democrats set this precedent. You know, it's kind of funny how we're at a point where so much of what the Senate does is set by Democratic precedent, the getting rid of the filibuster for judicial nominees and executive nominees, and this. The Democrats set a precedent that they could bring up the impeachment articles from the House and immediately vote on them before a trial began. The Democrats tried with Bill Clinton to file a motion that would immediately find him not guilty before a trial began. And it died at the hands of the Republicans in the Senate. Well, the Republicans could now use the Democrats' precedent and could immediately bring up articles of impeachment for a vote and find the president not guilty if it came there. They'd have to consider them. The Senate rules require they consider them. But they don't have to actually begin a formal trial. They can just move straight into a vote, and that's probably what they would do.
Eric Erickson, 3 degrees of separation from any newsmaker.
And never separated from the truth.
Now on 4 till 6 every day on 95.5 WSB.
Atlanta's news and talk.
Hello there. The phone number here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Listen, I don't feel the need to spend a ton of time talking about the fetal heartbeat legislation. I don't really know anyone who expected the judge to let it move forward. I mean, every federal judge in the country has enjoined these sorts of legislations, pieces of legislation. We're going to have an interesting Supreme Court case this year relating to these things and see where it proceeds. But I certainly think we'll be able to get our day in court and actually make a legal argument. And I think the legal argument is sound. But I also think there are a lot of federal judges out there who are going to withhold them anyway and strike them down as unconstitutional. It'll be a big test for the Trump appointees. But that being said, let's not kid ourselves. There were several members of the legislature who were willing to vote for this to placate the base, thinking federal judges would do exactly what happened today. And they would have never, ever, ever, never, ever voted for this stuff if they thought there was actually a reality, a real chance that these things might go into effect. I think they should. I absolutely fundamentally think that this law should go into effect. And I absolutely fundamentally think that this law is constitutional. But I also expected a federal judge would do exactly what this federal judge did. There's no reason to spend a bunch of time on it. When we come back, we got to go a little deeper on the whistleblower. But also, there is Georgia news, including a special election today in House District 71 down in the Noonan Peachtree City area. You need to go vote if you haven't. And also, an interesting name on the Senate potential list.
Running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hello, welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, Atlanta's Evening News on WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I am told there is a move afoot to get Herschel Walker to apply for the Senate. Although I don't know that he can, because he's not a Georgia resident. He's a Texas resident, but man, he's been meeting with Kevin McCarthy and he supported Brian Kemp. And yeah, I don't know that it's going to happen, but there are some folks who would really like him to apply. The big name there is Jan Jones. Jan Jones is the Senate, is the president, or not the, the Speaker pro tem in the House of Representatives. Now, we got to play this out strategically here. Jan Jones, suburban soccer mom, kids went to public school, active in her community in Alpharetta, the North Atlanta area where Republicans are worried about losing. She'd be an interesting pick. She'd also be an interesting pick because there are Republicans in the House of Representatives who want Barry Fleming to launch a coup against Speaker Ralston. Barry Fleming is the chairman of the Judiciary Committee in the House. He's well respected by his Republican colleagues. He is in the Augusta area. And some people, there are two camps in the House of Representatives. One camp says Barry Fleming lacks the testicular fortitude to ever stand up to David Ralston, and so no one should hold their breath. And that seems to be the prevailing wisdom right now by people who really think that that Barry Fleming is too scared of David Ralston to ever stand up to David Ralston. The other is that Barry Fleming very much wants to be Speaker, but that if Jan Jones were to, if David Ralston were to be pushed aside right now, Jan Jones would be Speaker, and Barry Fleming knows he can't run against the first female Speaker in the House of Representatives. So I'm sure there are people who would love for Jan Jones to go, those who believe that Fleming should stand up to David Ralston and know that he won't as long as Jan Jones is there. But I think the prevailing sentiment is that Barry Fleming lacks the testicular fortitude to stand up and do the right thing. That is the sentiment right now among a number of his colleagues who they were really hoping Ed Stetzler would do it. Ed Stetzler wound up not doing it, but actually walking away from those who wanted him to do it when Ralston promised him the fetal heartbeat bill could go through. And, you know, good for Ed. He got the fetal heartbeat legislation passed. I don't know that it would have passed, except the Speaker. There are lots of people who believe cut a deal with him and decided that he'd let fetal heartbeat pass in exchange for Ed Stetzler not leading the coup against the Speaker. So here, Stetzler's keeping his word by not going after the Speaker. So everybody turned to Barry Fleming. Well, Barry Fleming, he's not going to go after the Speaker as long as Jan Jones is there, because if he went after the Speaker, she would become the Speaker, and he wants to be the Speaker. But I think the prevailing sentiment is Barry Fleming just lacks the testicular fortitude to stand up to the Speaker on this issue. Which reminds me, there is an election in House District 71 tonight. It is a special election. The House District 71 is David Stover's seat in the Noonan Peachtree City area. It is the area of land between Peachtree City and, what is it, Lake Peachtree, and to the west of Lake Peachtree and to the east of Noonan, that area where the bypass is, goes up to Tyrone, goes down to Moreland, that area in there. There is a special election. It is Philip Singleton versus Marcy Sackerson. Marcy Sackerson is being funded by Speaker Ralston and Speaker Ralston's lobbyist buddies. Philip Singleton being funded by the people inside the district. Philip Singleton has come out and said the Speaker needs to go. He would stand up for that. He would replace David Stover's name on the resolution to oust the Speaker. Marcy Ralston doesn't think David Ralston needs to go at all. She doesn't think he's a problem. She'd stand up for him. So that should help you determine who to vote for in that race. That election happening tonight. Polls are open till 7. You should go vote in that election, preferably for Philip Singleton. All right. Now, we have covered the big issues in the state. I need to go back into some of the federal stuff just to let you know that, well, the Hunter Biden stuff does continue to percolate. And it's very interesting, I think, as the media comes to terms with the realization that Joe Biden is damaged goods because of this situation. Here's John King from CNN.
It is a fair question to ask. Because of Hunter Biden's international work, even if Joe Biden did absolutely nothing wrong, was he the best person to send to Ukraine to deliver a message on corruption? Or should the Obama administration have found somebody else?
Exactly. Well, the Biden campaign is responding somewhat tone deaf to the whole situation.
As an ancillary issue to everything that we just talked about in terms of the getting rid of the prosecutor is, of course, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, his work for that gas company. Does former VP Biden now have any regret that he didn't tell Hunter Biden, you know what, I just don't need the headache, don't work there?
No, because he didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, the White House said in 2014 that there was no issue with Hunter having that job. But, you know, and I think that asking this question is exactly, Allison, what Donald Trump wants, right? There's no evidence, as you stipulated at the top, which is important. There's no evidence that he did anything wrong. And yet he still hopes that you guys will ask questions like that, that you will try to insinuate that there was an optical issue, that there was some kind of, you know, that there's some kind of issue there that wasn't there. This is exactly the playbook that he ran in 2016. We're not going to let him do it this time. We are taking on directly any suggestion that there was anything improper here.
Yeah, I think people kind of get the impropriety of the setup. That Joe Biden is vice president, his son cashed in on it. And she can say all the time, you're just doing what Trump wants you to do. It's actually a legitimate line of inquiry. It's a legitimate line of inquiry. And I think people get it, that his son got rich off him being vice president. Listen to the CNN panel discussion.
You touched on this a bit earlier. Kate Bedingfield, others in the Biden campaign are correct. Things said by the president, Rudy Giuliani, and other Trump allies about Joe Biden, you cannot connect the dots. However, this is a test for Biden because his son was, as many people in Washington are, a consultant who, if his name was Hunter Smith or Hunter Doe, might not have had the access that he had. How big of an issue?
This, so far, from what everybody has done in terms of reporting, they've not uncovered anything that looks actually illegal. But it looks like that old standard definition of Washington, what's legal is really what's troubling to people. So he got hired, he got put on the board of this gas company, and as you said, if his name was Hunter Walker, would he have done so? And so that doesn't look good in this moment of where Democrats especially are fighting back against sort of corporate interests.
Exactly. This is a problem for the Democrats. And as long as Joe Biden is their would-be nominee, he's still ahead in the polls. Black voters love Joe Biden because he's tied to Barack Obama. As long as he's there, it's an issue the Trump campaign raises. And you know what? Here's the funny thing. This is the rich irony of it. Because Republicans are making it such a big deal, even the Democratic candidates like Kamala Harris and the like, they're doubling down in defense of Joe Biden.
Eric Erickson, 3 degrees of separation from any newsmaker.
And never separated from the truth.
Now on 4 till 6 every day on 95.5 WSB.
Atlanta's news and talk.
It is Eric Erickson here, Atlanta's Evening News. Let's go back to the phones to Harry, who's been waiting very patiently in Sandy Springs. Welcome. Hi, Harry.
Hey, how are you? I had a question. If it goes, they pass out impeachment and it goes to Senate for the trial, can the senators call anybody they want to, subpoena anybody they want to for questioning? For instance, can they go after the Clinton the dossier and that kind of stuff and those people?
They can't. It's got to be related to the trial that is handed over to the Senate from the Democrats in the House. It's got to be related to those articles of impeachment.
What about the possibility that maybe they did get it started in the Ukraine as part of that?
I suspect you will have members of the Senate as part of the president's defense. Willing to call people who would be what they would call exculpatory, showing that the president had a reasonable reason to look at this and that it wasn't some sort of corruption to shape 2020, but looking backwards to 2016. They could totally do that as exculpatory witnesses, and I suspect you would see Lindsey Graham try this. Remember, it would go to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and by going to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Lindsey Graham would be in charge of it, and he could certainly shape the exculpatory witnesses with the White House on that. Let's see. Reggie and Grayson, you're up next. Welcome. Reggie, how are you?
Hey, Eric.
Hi there.
Good to talk to you. It was great meeting you at the Resurgent.
Thank you.
My question is, I heard you say the other day that President Trump withholding the aid money that was appropriated by Congress would be an impeachable offense. If that's the case, I just need to understand from my own logic, how would what Joe Biden did with the aid money and withholding it on behalf of President Obama be different?
That is a great question. That's a fantastic question. There was actually a difference. What Biden was saying they were going to withhold were loan guarantees made by the State Department. It wasn't actually money appropriated by Congress, but loan guarantees.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And okay. What the president was withholding was actually money already appropriated by Congress. So, yeah, the money hadn't actually been appropriated for Congress. Essentially, and this should actually make people angry, is that the Obama administration was willing, Congress had approved him doing it, mind you, but he was willing to make loan guarantees up to $1 billion. And essentially, he was putting the federal government on the hook for $1 billion. Congress had not actually appropriated that $1 billion. They just told the president he had the discretion to go out and make those loan guarantees. Now, why was he allowed to withhold them if Congress were? Because Congress gave him discretion to enter into the negotiations and manage it. It wasn't actually appropriated money. That's the difference here. That's a great question, though. That was a great question. Eric Erickson here, Atlantis Evening News. Now, so Michelle Ricketts is stopping by to join me. She runs She Is Safe, a nonprofit. They have an event coming up, and boy, it is completely coincidental, Michelle, that you are here today, because I know you've got your Free a Girl event coming up, Free a Girl Change the World event. I want to talk to you about that, but I need people to know about She Is Safe and the work that you guys do. So first, thanks for joining me, and I would really love it if you could tell people what She Is Safe does.
Well, thanks so much, Eric. I'm so glad to be here and share about She Is Safe. It's our passion to make sure that girls everywhere have their fair opportunity at food and faith and freedom and new life to become the women they are designed to be. We've been doing this work for about 17 years, and we're in 8 countries right now. In the last 12 months, we have either prevented or rescued or restored 20,600 women and girls, and a few men and boys there too, in some of the highest risk places of the world. So that's, for us, every day is Day of the Girl. We believe that they are the game changers. They're going to make a difference in how little boys are raised going forward and how their daughters see themselves in the world, especially in countries where there is a common practice of abuse and slavery of girls and women. You know, of course, that 99% of all sex slaves are female. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to make a dent on this modern slavery issue and human trafficking, it makes all the sense in the world to focus on girls.
Well, it does. And I again, coincidental timing to have you here, because that story came out that was so horrific from the New York Times over the weekend and into Monday about child abuse around the world and human trafficking and how it's all related. And it's just, it turns your stomach to know the stuff that's going on, and to have a group like y'all's out there rescuing children from these situations is just, I'm glad there are people like you out there who do that.
Well, it really is a privilege of mine. You know, I was rescued from the home of a pedophile when I was a teen and placed with a lovely family who gave me the opportunity to rebuild my life. And you know, it just makes me realize that no one is beyond hope or beyond reach. I believe if we keep a laser focus on the issues and those who are most vulnerable, we really can move into this issue and make a huge difference in the next generation.
I agree. I'm talking to Michelle Ricketts from She Is Safe, which is a nonprofit that rescues children from abuse around the world, fights human trafficking. Michelle, what goes into supporting an organization like She Is Safe?
Well, it takes a whole lot of people. For one, we have about 18 people on staff here at our headquarters in Roswell, Georgia. And then we partner with all kinds of other organizations. They're faith-based organizations, as we are, who have boots on the ground, and most are led by women, though not all of them, who have grown up with these abuses in their lives. So that network of wonderful people, and of course those people who pray for us and who support us, about 78% of our support comes from individual families and households, and another margin, small margin, from churches. And so we really count on people to get behind us so that we continue not only to rescue people, but we're really big on prevention, getting into the highest risk communities and making sure that families understand that it's illegal to traffic a person anywhere in the world today. It's illegal. And that there are alternatives to selling their children, that we will help them learn to generate income a different way than selling people. And you would be surprised, I think, at how quickly people take us up on those great opportunities. But that's what it's all about, shining the light on the truth that this is evil and illegal, and that there are pathways to freedom that we can make available.
Now, on October 11th, in Alpharetta, at the Hotel at Avalon, you guys have an event coming up. Tell us about that.
Well, this is our annual fundraiser. It coincides with International Day of the Girl, which is a time to recognize the unique challenges for girls around the world, mostly in the developing world, and then highlights their tremendous potential. You know, the World Bank did a study on how we could address global poverty, and the only scenario that actually made any sense was to invest in girls. So She Is Safe, as I said, every day is Day of the Girl for us, so we jumped on that when we learned about Day of the Girl on October 11th and said, let's just own that in God's name and say we believe that there are solutions, and they reside in good people coming forward, taking risks, being willing to go into the hardest places and provide redemption. And that has really resonated with a lot of people who are eager to do something on the issue of human trafficking, but they don't know where to begin. So we try to open avenues for people to volunteer with us and be a part of really seeing lives and communities changed.
And your website is sheissafe.org if people want to find more information.
That's right. And I would also mention we have events at Avalon all week long. October 8th is a Tuesday, and we have preschool events. So Mommy and Me and caregivers and their children on Wednesday, October 9th, is another event. There's a yoga class, and I'll be speaking after that class. We have a sip and stroll on the 10th on Thursday. And then the big day of celebration starts at 4:30 with events and a butterfly release on the grounds, and wonderful sponsors there joining us and speakers. And then the gala, we have a rooftop reception at 6 p.m., and I hope people will be – we're going to have a big surprise there on the rooftop. I hope people will go onto our website. It's right there on the homepage to register and say, yeah, I want to be a part of this.
And if people want more information, I set this up. If you text the word support to 33777, I'll send you back a link to see it, She Is Safe, so you can get it on your phone. Text support to 33777. Michelle, thanks so much for stopping by, and good luck on the event.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Michelle Ricketts from She Is Safe. Again, they go around the world rescuing kids from human trafficking. They have some incredible stories. If you want to find out more about the organization or the event, it is October 11th in Alpharetta. Text the word support to 33777.
Eric Erickson, connected to the people who make news.
And now on 4 till 6 every day.
95.5 WSB.
Atlanta's news and talk.
Ann Sophie Mutter may be my new hero. She's a violinist. I love classical music. I love Bach. I love Beethoven. She was in the middle of performing Beethoven's violin concerto last night when someone who was described as millennial-looking girl in the second row popped up with a cell phone and started filming it. She was performing in the middle of the movement, and she stopped and confronted the audience member and asked the audience member to stop recording, saying, either I will leave or you will put away your phone and recording device. The millennial stood up and began arguing with the famous violinist over her right to record, and security had to remove the millennial from the crowd for trying to record instead of just appreciating the moment.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.